Hey, hey, and welcome into the House of L podcast. I'm Lawrence Holmes. Thanks so much for hanging out. I appreciate it. Got a guest today. I'm excited about the subject matter because I haven't really done a ton of Illini on the pod, but considering how well things have gone for Illinois as a program, I thought that I'd check in with my guy, Jeremy Warner of the Illini Inquirer, and just see what he thinks about the teams that he's covering. So he's been nice enough to join me. Thanks for being on the pod. I appreciate it. How you been?
Doing well, Lawrence. Thanks for having me. House of L listener myself, so I appreciate the invite. And it's a good time because after an emotional loss, disappointing loss at UCLA, it is kind of nice every once in a while to zoom out what Illinois athletics has become.
Yeah, look, I was, I'm a DePaul guy, and I don't really root for Illinois, but I was rooting for them so hard against UCLA because I hate Mick Cronin. But that's another story for another day. But it was a great game by them. But here's what I wanted to get into. I've been thinking about it for the past few months, and I've been like bothering my showmates with this idea, and I wanted to run it by someone who's been around the Illinois program for forever. Are we in the golden age of Illini athletics?
It's a great question, and it's one that I've tried to put out there that enjoy this, because when I first really got into covering this professionally out of college, it was the worst decade of Illinois athletics. I mean, 7 of 10 missed NCAA tournaments. Illinois football was an embarrassment. Outside of Rutgers, no one in the Big Ten was even come close to how bad they were. Indiana, I guess, was in that at the time. How things have changed for both programs. But this is one of the golden ages. Now, I go the modern era of college athletics, which I think of whether it's 1970, 1975, whatever it is. College athletics certainly changed a lot, but you know, Illinois was pretty good in the 40s and the 30s, 20s when it came to football and basketball. But if we're talking really where modern college athletics is, I grew up, Lawrence, I was born in 1987, almost a year exactly after the Bears won the Super Bowl. And all my life, I was told about the 85 Bears. And at some point I just got sick of it. I'm like, that was 20 years ago. That was 30 years ago, 40 years ago now. I think Illinois fans that grew up kept hearing about how the 80s belonged to the Illini, because Illinois under Lou Henson in the 80s was fantastic at basketball, getting all that Chicago talent, and then leads up to the 1989 Final Four. But football was really good at that time too. Mike White had come in, brought all these JUCO players from California, and football was really, really good during that time. But you know, while basketball for Illinois was great in the early 2000s, football had some blips of success. I think Illinois fans were just like, I'm sick of hearing the 80s belong to the Illini. And Josh Whitman got hired in the mid-2010s, and it's completely changed his program with two hires, and Brett Bielema and Brad Underwood, of course. But I got some stats for you, Lawrence, if you don't mind me throwing these out here. Just to put in perspective of where Illinois has come, 10 years before Brad Underwood, Illinois had a 56.6% overall winning percentage. They were 43.3% in the Big Ten, three NCAA tournament appearances, three top five Big Ten finishes. 9 years with Underwood, they have a 63.6% winning percentage, so up 8%. 60% in the Big Ten winning percentage, that's up 17%. Six top five Big Ten finishes, as opposed to three in the 10 years before, and six NCAA tournament appearances, as opposed to the three in the 10 before. And those are all in a row, like six in a row, the first 2 years, and then you had the COVID year. Football, the 18 years before Brett Bielema, 34% winning percentage, 24% in the Big Ten, five bowl games, two bowl wins, one season of 8+ wins. In the 5 years of Bielema, 59% winning percentage, up from 34. 51% of the games in the Big Ten, they're winning half their Big Ten games when they were winning a quarter of them before. Three bowls, two bowl wins, three seasons of 8+ wins, as opposed to one in the 18 years before. And since 2002, they're tied with Indiana for the sixth most wins in the Big Ten at 19. And I'm not even getting to women's basketball, right, which is an absolute disaster before. But I compared that to the 80s, Lawrence. And in the 80s, Illinois basketball had two Elite Eights. One Final Four and one Big Ten title. Underwood has one Elite Eight, one Big Ten title. So he's missing that Final Four. Otherwise, Brad Underwood's putting together a Lou Henson-like kind of run here. And then football, two 10-plus win seasons, one bowl win, one Rose Bowl appearance in the 80s. Bielma has two 9-win seasons, two bowl wins over SEC opponents. He's missing that Rose Bowl college football playoff type. But all of that to say, Lawrence, is just way better than the decade before, and it's really comparable to the 80s with 4 years left, 4 or 5 years left in this decade to where maybe the 2020s can belong to the Illini.
Okay, I love that you came with your own statistics on this.
Came prepared for you.
I'm very much appreciated. I want to go back to something that you said. I want to talk about Josh Whitman for a second, because I was like, man, he's very intense. And I was wondering if that intensity was going to be something that would be his downfall. And it's been a strength. How is he, beyond the hires, like the hires are one thing, but like you said, like Illini women's basketball is strong too. Like there, it seemed like there's been an uplifting of the entire program. How would you say that he went about doing that?
It all starts with Josh Whitman. Talking with people that cover nationally, like Scott Docterman from The Athletic, who I really respect, you know, sometimes you can get caught in your hole. And I think Josh Whitman's, for my money, the best athletic director in the country. Scott thinks the same thing.
Wow.
Which was a big risk, Lawrence. I mean, I'm 38 years old right now. He was 37 years old when he was hired as the athletic director of Illinois as a D3 athletic director. So at the time, Illinois had fired its football coach. It had fired its athletic director. It had fired its president at the university. All of these interim leaders were part of this athletic director search. So it could have been a complete disaster. At the time, you were hoping for Rick George, who's the Colorado AD. Hasn't been all that great, but he's an Illini alum. Pat Chun, who was the Washington State AD at the time, was another finalist. He's now the Washington athletic director. So you had some decent candidates, but Illinois went with the alum hire, but an unproven one in Josh Whitman, albeit a guy who was really impressive. But that was a big risk for Barbara Wilson, who's now the president of Iowa at the time. She was the interim president at Illinois, or the interim chancellor at Illinois. And I liked what Josh Whitman said. He said at his press conference, we will win. But he had some growing pains. I mean, Lovie Smith was a big hire to kind of show, hey, I can do this. And Lovie wasn't a disaster of a hire, but he wasn't a success, right? He helped them kind of get back on their feet after the Tim Beckman thing.
It was like he put in a floor.
Yes. He just made them, okay, Illinois is a serious program again, because Tim Beckman was not a serious head coach at that time. So at least he gave you some ability to raise money around donors to get a new football facility and at least give you some respectability back. And he actually got talent into the program. He just didn't make the most of it. And then Nancy Faye, the women's basketball coach, went 7-77 in Big Ten play. That was his first hire. D3 Hall of Famer. Now, Brad Underwood, his first 2 years didn't go all that well, Lawrence. I mean, it was a huge rebuild and the portal wasn't a thing at that time. But a couple years in, it's like Josh is saying the right things. I believe in him, but like, you got to do a little bit better than this. But he finally has nailed some of these hires, getting Brett Bielma, Brad Underwood building this up. Shauna Green's been an absolute grand slam of a hire, maybe as impressive a job as anybody. But the thing about Josh Whitman is he's got the passion of an alum. Mm-hmm. I don't think hiring alums for the coaching jobs are always the best. Like, it can work out, but the hit rate hasn't been phenomenal with football and basketball. But I think that passion matters. He knows Illinois. He knows its strengths. He knows its weaknesses. And he really knows what the program is. Two, he's a phenomenal fundraiser. He can just connect with fans because of his passion, but also he's just really good with people. Three, he's a lawyer. I think right now at this time in college athletics,
you gotta have a lawyer
is really needed, right? And he's become the D1 council chair at the NCAA level. He's like a national voice now with all of this. And I think he's able to articulate both in writing and, you know, speaking of where athletics needs to go, but also he's got some foresight. I think he's millennial / Gen X, like right in there. So I think he understands, like, he's got to be a little bit progressive. And with Illinois, he wasn't one of those ADs who was like, I don't know about this NIL. I don't know about all this stuff. He got ahead of the curve. He set up Illinois to where we are going to embrace NIL. We are going to weaponize our fan base because we see this as a launching pad to help our program pass up a lot of these programs, whether it's Wisconsin, Michigan State, some of these programs are kind of like held back on some of those things. He put the pedal to the metal, embraced those things, and it's really catapulted Illinois forward. So I think he's been a visionary. I think his passion, but I also just think his intelligence from a legal mind has really helped Illinois.
From afar, I always liked Brett Bielema. I always found him to be really interesting, like an actual character in college football, whether he was at Wisconsin or he was at Arkansas. And getting the chance to interview him a few times, I feel like that's confirmed now. Like, I'm like, I really like Brett. I like what he's done. I like that it seems like after being out in the wilderness, he has found a home and he is happy at his home, which is rare. And I'm not saying that he wouldn't end up leaving, but it sure doesn't feel like that he's looking to job climb anymore. Is that the feeling that you get as being someone who's around him every day?
Yes. I think this is Brett Bielema was at Wisconsin. He was the guy after the guy there, right? At Barry Alvarez. So whenever we talked about Brett Bielema's success, which is extraordinary, he took advantage of when Penn State was down, Ohio State was down, Michigan was down. He was the king of the Big Ten, 3 straight Big Ten titles. And he was a young coach, again, around my age when he was doing those things. And he saw the SEC, saw Arkansas open up and goes, I want to go do it at that stage against Saban in his prime, mm-hmm. against LSU. All the SEC West was
a monster,
probably the best division you'll ever see, right? Yep. You know it, Lawrence is an Alabama guy. Like, it was just, and he did okay there. Like, Arkansas has struggled to do anything since he got fired. But I think he knows, like, I can chase that stuff or I can chase a place where I think I can win. And you got to remember, he's a disciple of Hayden Fry, who is the guy who turned around that Iowa program. He's a disciple of Barry Alvarez, who is the guy who turned around that program. And he's a disciple of Kirk Ferentz and Bill Snyder. Those guys are, you know, statue guys at their programs. Even if those guys don't win national titles, Lawrence, those are the guys who, on their obituary, being the head coach of those places is number one. I think he sees that this is his legacy job, that if he gets Illinois to the place where Wisconsin football was under Barry, where Iowa football was under Hayden Fry, Kansas State was under Bill Snyder, he'll be the coach from that program, like of the modern era, right? There's not another guy here at Illinois. Mike White was only here for 7 years, got fired in an NCAA scandal. John Makovich was only here 4 years before he left for Texas. I think Brett Bielema sees that I can be here a decade and a half, 2 decades, win more games than anybody at that program, lift that program up to where it can make college football playoffs and do it. And I think he's the right guy because he came in here with some questions, right? It didn't work out at Arkansas, and he was in the NFL for a couple years. And he was pretty boisterous at the other places he was and rubbed some people the wrong way. But he always says Josh Whitman and Illinois are getting the best version of him. I think he's matured, but he's still got that bite to him. He's still got that charm to him that I think Illinois needs. And what's different from him, from Lovie Smith, is, you know, you're a guy that's covered Lovie Smith. I think the CEO things that a college coach needs to do today, which is coaches, which is recruit the heck out of this place, mm-hmm. And be really personable to donors and all those things. Lovie Smith didn't quite embrace that. Lovie Smith really wasn't a part of this community, right? He was just the head coach. Like, that's what he wanted to do. Brett Bielema has ingratiated himself with all that. He's got a ridiculous work ethic. He's the most organized person I've ever seen. And that's what it takes at a place like Illinois to win. So I think he knows this is his legacy job. He's got a non-compete clause in the Big Ten. Has a huge buyout for the rest of college football. I think the only thing that could draw him is the NFL, and I think the NFL would need to see a lot more from Brett Bielema to get to that level. I think this is a marriage long-term, and part of it is Josh Whitman and Brett Bielema believe in each other.
So what's it like now? Because Brett, I honestly, like, don't whenever I think about Big Ten football, I think about what Brett told me about a year and a half ago when NBC Sports Chicago still existed, RIP. And that's the idea of that Illini football needed to stay ahead of the cut line. Yeah. Like, that's a big thing is, I'm like, you know what? That's a great way to put it. I think that he's gone beyond that. And instead of just keeping them ahead of the cut line, they're a contender. Now, Ohio State is Ohio State. Indiana has come out of nowhere with Kurt Cignetti and just bullied everyone, including Alabama, on the biggest stage, which is crazy to think of 3 years ago that even being the case. But what are the challenges now? With the league being so big and having so many quality programs, what are the challenges and how has he addressed them?
Yeah, the challenge for Illinois is now how do you get to – because here's the thing about Indiana and Kurt Cignetti. They just completely have ruined realistic expectations for everybody else. Right? Like
I heard someone mention it as Kurt Cignetti is going to get people fired.
Yes, because now everybody thinks, well, we can get there. I don't know if this is ever happening again. Maybe it can happen nowadays because of the portal and all that. I just don't know if this can ever happen again. So he has just completely ruined realistic expectations. But if it weren't for Cignetti, I think people would be talking about, like, how has Brett Bielema done this? Like, Illinois was a dumpster fire before, and now they're consistently 5-9 in the Big Ten. And if you would have told me when Bielema got hired, like, I've heard from Illini fans for decades, just get me to bowl games and I'll be happy. Well, then you get to bowl games. I told them this, and then you won't be happy because you want to raise that bar. But that's a kudos to Brett Bielema. He has raised those expectations, and he has embraced those expectations of now it's about getting to the college football playoff. I don't think it's winning it because that is really difficult, and you got to have ridiculous talent, or you have to have a bunch of 24-year-olds who fit perfectly and are coached up perfectly like Cignetti did. But just getting there would be monstrous for this program. And I think it's unrealistic to think Illinois is going to be Ohio State, Oregon, or anything like that, but it can be Iowa. It can be Wisconsin. And now it's just consistently doing that, Lawrence, and putting together that one special group. Like Michigan State had that one special group that got to a college football playoff. Iowa put together, I believe, a special group that got to a college football playoff. Can you have that one group that gets there and you're at the big table, right? I think Illinois, most years when they have a group that's been together for a year or two, they can have that dream of getting to the college football playoff. They had it this year. They didn't end up doing it because the Big Ten's really good. Their defense wasn't quite good enough. And they've made some changes because of that, but they still won 9 games. They still beat Tennessee in a bowl game. So like, this was still one of the best seasons in Illinois history, yet it had a twinge of disappointment. I can't think of a better compliment to Brett Bielema than that you were kind of disappointed in a 9-win season, which you beat an SEC opponent. That's how he's raised the level of expectation, but it's getting talent. It's just continuing to get higher and higher ends of talent. They just signed their best recruiting class since Ron Zook was here. So they are gradually getting better there. They've added some good transfer additions. They got a quarterback in Caden Hauser who's tore it up at ECU. So the hard part is maintaining this. Lawrence is continuing to get to bowl games, continuing to win 8+ games. Because you mentioned the Big Ten's great. Big Ten is the best conference in college football right now. I think it's taken that. Is it as deep as the SEC? Maybe not, but the top end surely is better right now, I think, than the SEC, which is, 3 years ago, I didn't think I'd be saying that. But I think that's where it's gotten because of the financial resources that are here. So now the challenge is meeting your own expectations. That's going to be fascinating to watch.
Brad Underwood, also a fascinating figure. And I remember when he got the job and looking at his history that he was like, hey, we want to get a shot up in the first 7 seconds of the shot clock. That has evolved. Like his offense has evolved. And I wasn't sure if Brad was the type of coach that would evolve. Yeah. Like he seems very dogmatic in the things that he likes to do. So how has he evolved? And how does he gotten this program to a place where they're dangerous? I mean, if we went back a week ago, we're talking about the Illini fighting for number one seed. And theoretically, they could get themselves back there before the tournament starts. But the fact that Illinois basketball is continuing to try different things and find different ways. I'm amazed that he's been able to do this. So how has he done it?
Yeah, you think of a guy who comes from the Bob Huggins tree, Frank Martin tree, right? And it's like this fiery, you said a perfect, dogmatic coach. And you think, is he too stubborn, right? Is he too stubborn with certain things? But the one thing about Brad, boy, he wants to win. So he will do anything it takes to win. I think his strength of his entire tenure has been his ability to adapt. You know, he gets Kofi Coburn in here and completely changes a defense that was pressure, press Virginia style, get in your face, force a bunch of turnovers into where they went drop coverage and built around this All-American big man. And obviously you went to more ball screens with him on Ayo Dosunmu and Trent Frazier and Andre Curbelo. And they had a good group of smaller guards, but then they get Terrence Shannon in here, Marcus Damask, and they go to more of this booty ball style push up and transition five out with Coleman Hawkins at the five. And then they slowly started to get themselves ingratiated into all the agents over in Europe, spend a lot of time over there. And they get a big man in Tomislav Ivicic, who's an even better five-out center than Coleman Hawkins. And it just completely changed the game. And now they had Kasper Šakešonis and Will Riley, the first one-and-dones in program history, which is big. Illinois starting to become an NBA factory with Shannon, Dosunmu, Šakešonis, Riley. Now you get Keaton Wagler in here. But then you get a couple more Europeans, and David Mirkovic and Zvonimir Ivicic joins, and Andrei Stojakovic. And you know, there was a long time, Lawrence, where Illinois was so Chicago dependent on talent, right? And for years, Bruce Weber and John Gross missed out on one of the greatest runs of talent you will ever see in the city. I mean, you had Sharon Collins, Julian Wright, John Shire, Derrick Rose, Evan Turner, Anthony Davis, Jabari Parker, Jahlil Okafor, Jalen Brunson. Missed on all of them. Missed on all, like, and that's why Illinois was not winning. You get Dosunmu and you get some good players and Terrence Shannon on the rebound through a transfer, but now they don't need Chicago, right? Like, they can go anywhere in the world. Like, they get guys from the Caribbean with Orlando Antigua and his connections over there, and Orlando and Jeff Alexander with their connections in Europe. So they haven't needed that. But most importantly, those guys fit exactly how they want to play this five-out style of offense that has created the most historic offense efficiency-wise in the history of KenPom, which dates back to 1997. Now, they need to play better defense, and part of that is personnel-wise. They got some big, slow guys. So that's going to be a concern going to the tournament. But it gives them a chance, Lawrence, to be one of the top Big Ten programs year after year after year, and a team that has legitimate hopes of going to an Elite Eight, going to a Final Four. Whether they do or not is going to determine whether people think this is a success or whether Brad Underwood is ultimately good enough. But he's put them in position where they can continually get bites at the apple. And it took Lou Henson 14 years to get to his Final Four. People forget about that. It took Matt Painter 18 years, I believe, to get to his Final Four. So sometimes it takes way longer than you want with a one-and-done tournament. We love it, but it has a lot of variance to it. But because of Brad Underwood and his ability to adapt, his ability to reach out recruiting-wise, this program is one of the better teams in the country.
It's funny. I always keep an eye on John Gross because I feel like he found his level. Like, he's done a tremendous job at Akron. It was so weird. I ran into him a few years ago in Grand Rapids. There was like a coach's clinic or something, and I was just up there for the day. And I had a nice chat with him, and I was like, you know what? It didn't work. It didn't exactly like it didn't work in Champaign, but he's a good coach and a good guy. So I'm happy to see that he's having success. He's got another good team at Akron this year. They'll probably end up making the tournament. So shout out to him for that. One more thing I want to ask you about Illinois, and that's about the fan base. You and I have had multiple discussions online and offline about the schism between Chicago and Champaign, with there being less reliance on Chicago as a recruiting ground, not that it should be ignored. Do you feel like any of that has gotten better?
Yeah, winning solves a lot, right? I think winning joins everybody together, right? There just hasn't been as big of a schism with that because, you know, it's easy for Chicago to say no to Illinois and, you know, when Illinois is not very good. Like, they're not sending anybody to the NBA. I mean, it took from Myers Leonard to Ayo Dosunmu to have a draft pick, right? It took from Myers Leonard to Terrence Shannon to have somebody go in the first round. So it's difficult to go somewhere when they're not getting the NCAA tournament. But now Illinois's got money too, so that helps. Everything is Illinois' ability to do it. But no, like, I think Central Illinois fans always felt like Chicago looked down on Illinois, and you know, there's always a cultural shit difference between all that. But man, winning cures all. And I was at California this weekend. There were more Illinois fans there than USC fans. There's as many Illinois fans there as UCLA fans. Going to the NCAA tournament, going to Vegas for games, going to Nashville where Illinois is in Tennessee territory and they have as many fans there as Tennessee fans. Like, this is such a huge alumni base and such a huge fan base. And they are so passionate. They care so much. And kudos to Brett Bielema for feeding into that with football, because this was the most apathetic fan base. It was an angry fan base for basketball because they still cared. They didn't care for football. And now you're seeing sellouts at Memorial Stadium, which is great for their bottom line. As you said, Lawrence, it's great for staying above the cut line, because I think there's contraction that's going to happen. And Illinois, no doubt, is above that cut line. But 5 years ago, Illinois could have been a program that's like, yeah, we want Chicago, we want that area, we want Illinois, but they don't compete at anything. It was really important for them to stay above that cut line for whenever the Big Ten and SEC become the Super Two, right? So, but to get back to your point, like, this is one of the best fan bases in the country, and they're finally getting what they deserve, which is a football program that matters and a basketball program that can compete for the top of the Big Ten and compete to go very far in the NCAA tournament. And then the women's program, I want to shout them out. Like, they're doing things that we've never seen, at least in 25 years, making NCAA tournaments, winning an NCAA tournament game for the first time in 25 years. And they're starting to matter, and they're starting to get talent that can go to the WNBA, which this program basically has none of since Jenna Smith. So the fan base is awesome. It is huge. And it's finally being weaponized, because they have programs to really, really care about and really get behind.
So I see on your desk that you have Terry Borz's book.
Yeah, right there.
I read that
a couple years ago.
Great book, right? I miss that guy all the time, man. His death was...
Yeah, I'm sorry to hear that for all you guys. And I've gotten to know you guys a lot at the Score, and I know just how much he meant to you. And I wish I would have known him, but I felt like I did through all you guys and through listening to years, man, on the Score.
Yeah, like that's kind of the beautiful thing about it, is that I think a lot of people... I tell everyone that they should read the book, because it really gives you... Because people forget about Terry as a sports writer.
He's a great writer. I guess a writer myself, I'm sitting there going, this guy knows how to do this. It's like, oh yeah, he covered the Jordan Bull. So he probably knew how to write a thing or two.
Yeah, he knew how to do a lot of cool stuff. So anytime I see someone who shouts Uncle Terry out, I'm very, very happy. So thank you for that. Before I let you go, got a White Sox thought for me?
I think I might watch. I haven't watched very much here, Lawrence. I started to watch. Sorry to everybody at CHSN, but it was kind of like, yeah, I'll watch this month of baseball. I'll stop my subscription. I'll watch this month. I love that we have good catchers. That's fun. Like, for a franchise that's had terrible catching for a long time, I'm excited that Colson Montgomery was so good. I'm excited to watch Rach Chulowski in probably a year and a half whenever he joins. But Justin LeBron, your Bama guy, is really good too. So I'm not holding out hope for him. But yeah, like, it's at least we're getting better, but boy, this is tough. This is tough to go through a second time basically in a decade. And that's where in the back of my mind is like, hey, this is fun when prospects get called up, but it doesn't mean anything in 4 or 5 years. So hopefully they start spending next offseason, because you can't just get prospects, as you know. And we did not hit on the free agents last time around.
Yeah, and there's not even going to be a season next year.
I know. That's what...
It's so sad.
At least it happens now for us, right?
You're compared right. At the bottom. Like
3 years from now.
No, you're right. Instead of the winning window and losing some time in a winning window, you're losing it, hopefully, on the upswing of a franchise.
But could we have not, Lawrence, could we have not just had a normal transition to new ownership? Like, why does even a transition to new ownership have to be weird?
So convoluted. Like, it's going to be very strange. Like, this whole thing, it's weird, because I was trying to explain to people, like, you really need to read that statement, because that statement doesn't say that this is going to happen overnight. It gives you a time frame, and then, like, postmarks that need to be hit. And it's like, exactly. Like, why? Like, it's like people got really excited. And I'm like, no, not yet. Like, don't get excited about any of that stuff yet.
Can I just have my normal billionaire, super billionaire owner that can just afford their own stadium wherever they want in the state for the Bears, can invest Steve Cohen money into the roster right away?
No.
And just take ownership. No, it's got to, for us Chicago fans, it's got to be super weird and convoluted.
Nothing truer has ever been said. Please, you should get the Illini Inquirer. How can people get it?
Yeah, just go to IlliniInquirer.com. It's part of 24/7 Sports Illinois. We do have a VIP membership deal going on, so 50% off if you want to try us there. But we appreciate all the support, Lawrence, and appreciate you having me on.
Thank you so much for this. This is great. That is Jeremy Warner of the Illini Inquirer. He's terrific. And beyond talking about just the Illini, he's great talking college football and basketball, knows the Big Ten like the back of his hand. And I'm glad that he didn't bristle at my idea about this being the golden age, and he came with some facts. Like, that's beautiful stuff. I will talk to you next time. Peace.
Thank you for calling the Bombas Comfort Line. Bombas make socks, slippers, tees, and underwear made with the highest quality materials. Press 1 for comfort, 2 for style, 3 for donation.
You chose style. Bombas is styles for whatever you enjoy. You can run in Bombas, lounge in Bombas, dress them up, dress them down, but always give back in Bombas. Because with every item purchased, another is donated. Bombas, comfort worth calling for. Go to bombas.com/audio and use code AUDIO for 20% off your first purchase. That's BOMBAS.com and use code AUDIO.
Why choose a Sleep Number smart bed?
Can I make my site softer?
Can I make my site firmer?
Can we sleep cooler?
Sleep Number does that. Cools up to 8 times faster and lets you choose your ideal comfort on either side, your Sleep Number setting. Enjoy personalized comfort for better sleep night after night. And now, during our President's Day sale, take 50% off our limited edition bed, plus an extra $100 off all mattresses. End Saturday. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.